Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jun Kinoshita from the FSH Society. So tell me a little bit about the FSH Society.
Right, so the FSH Society, first of all, it stands for fascio-scapulo-humeral, which is a real mouthful. Fascio means the face. Scapulo is the scapula, the shoulder blade, and humeral is the humerus, the upper arms. And it refers to these three parts of your body because those are where people with FSH muscular dystrophy very typically first start to experience muscle weakness. It's a degenerative, inherited condition that affects around close to 1 million people worldwide, about 1 in 8,000 people in the population. And as I said, you know, it very typically, not always, but in many patients, will first begin to affect muscles of the face, so that people with FSHD might have difficulty smiling or showing facial expression. They may have difficulty closing their eyes fully if that progresses where it's more severe. They may have difficulty with speech, eating, and so forth. And the shoulder blades, when those muscles are affected, they get what's called scapular winging. So the shoulder blades actually kind of protrude outward like little, almost like little wings bumping out of your back. And you can really see that if somebody tries to raise their arm, the scapula just comes out of, becomes dislocated. And that can be very painful. It also can impair the ability to move the arm freely. So often people will not be able to raise their arm above shoulder height. And then the upper arm, the biceps especially, can become weak, and people will have difficulty lifting their arms at all to do even things that many of us take for granted, like being able to brush your teeth or comb your hair or reach for something on a shelf, becomes impossible. So that said, the condition can also extend to just about any skeletal muscle in the body. A lot of people lose muscles in their legs and develop what's called a foot drop, where you can't lift your foot and your foot falls, can't be supported, which makes it, as you can imagine, very difficult to walk. And people will trip and fall, and they will require the use of a foot orthotic, a kind of brace to hold up the foot. Another area that's very typically affected are the core muscles, so the abdominal muscles that support your back and your, so one can develop a very pronounced sway back, and that then can begin to impinge on your internal organs and on your breathing, and that can become a serious issue. So I meant to make that short, but I hope that gives you some picture of what this disease is like.
Certainly does. Can you tell me a little bit about the society's work?
So the FSH Society was founded in 1991 by two people who have FSHD, and one was a scientist, the other was had been studying neuroscience. He's Daniel Perez, who is currently still the president and CEO of the FSH Society. So Dan went to Harvard and studied neurobiology. He already knew at that time that he was affected by FSHD, so he wanted to dedicate his career to finding a solution. And at that time, there was no research going on FSHD, and he was really puzzled about this. We have in the U.S. a very large organization called the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and he went to them, and as have many other people with FSHD, and at that time, which was maybe 20, 25 years ago, the Muscular Dystrophy Association really was not focused and did not want to support work on FSHD. And so Daniel, just by chance, met another gentleman who was also affected, who was a scientist at the University of California in San Diego, and the two of them decided they needed to do something. So they formed the FSH Society, and their first goal was really to try to persuade the government, the National Institutes of Health, to fund research. But when they went to talk to NIH, they were told that, well, they don't, they could offer to fund a grant, but there were no scientists to apply for them. And, of course, if you go to talk to the researchers, they'll say, well, they can't work on the field because there's no funding. So it's a real, you know, chicken and egg problem. How do you get research going in the field when there's no funding and there's nobody working on it? So they really bootstrapped the field, persuading scientists to take an interest, persuading friends and family to donate money. And I should also say at that time, because there was no organization dedicated to FSHD, it was really difficult to find other families. There was no number you could call to say, you know, I'd like to meet other people. It was just through word of mouth and, person by person building a network. And today, because of that early work, they were able to raise funding. They were able to get some very, really world-class scientists working on FSHD. And then they were able to start building a network. And then thanks to the internet, they were able to, you know, start to make their existence known and connect with patients. And so there are now, I think over the history of the organization, you know, we've connected with probably between 5,000 and 10,000 individuals around the world who are either personally affected or have family members who are affected. And the research funded by the FSH Society really got the field going, and the results have been really very spectacular. We're quite proud of what's been achieved. 4 years ago, the genetic mechanism for the disease was really nailed down and published in Science, which is one of the premier scientific journals in the world. And that story landed on the front page of the New York Times. Two years later, a second gene was discovered. And shortly after that, it was discovered that that gene interacted with the first mechanism, which really gave this whole field confidence that we had really found the key to FSHD. So now there's many, many projects we're funding that are trying to develop better diagnostics and better treatments. We are mapping the path to get to clinical trials faster. And at the same time, you know, while patients are waiting for treatments, they really need education and support. I mean, it's very lonely to have a disease like this and not know anybody else who has it, to not have anybody you can ask about how to cope with the daily issues that come up when you have a disease like this. And so we try to give patients support. We produce educational material that's, you know, rigorous and well-reviewed and, you know, accurate. And we bring patients together so they can, you know, They know more than the doctors, I can tell you that. So they have a lot to teach each other, so we try to create those opportunities for the patients.
So what are the next immediate steps for the society?
The next immediate steps, we are really focused right now on several things. One is to raise the raise public awareness of FSH muscular dystrophy. So many people have heard of kind of muscular dystrophy, but that's a blanket term, kind of like cancer. And if you know anything about cancer, that there's no one disease called cancer. It's hundreds of diseases that share certain characteristics, you know, cells that grow out of control. But each of those cancers has to be addressed as its own disease. It's, you know, they're not the same. One is not the same as the other. So muscular dystrophy is like that. And right now we're still in a period of time and most of the public doesn't know that. Or if they know anything about it, they think of it as maybe Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is the type that the MDA in the U.S. focused on for the first 40, 50 years. But there are many other types, and so we want to raise awareness about FSHD in particular because it's underdiagnosed. Most patients, I think there was a study that said the average time from a patient manifesting a symptom like losing the ability to smile or developing a weakness in one arm or something like that, the time from that first symptom until they get a diagnosis is somewhere between 9 to 11 years. And that's a long period of time to be running around, going to doctors, getting treatments that don't work, being in pain, not knowing what's going on. So we want to shorten that time by raising awareness. It might be, you know, if people recognize these symptoms more, you know, if they saw friends struggling, they might say, you know, you might have FSHD. Or somebody might recognize it in themselves, and it's really important that this comes from people because the doctors themselves often have never seen a case or they have information that's out of date. The knowledge in FSHD has progressed so far, and many patients will go to a doctor that will give them information about FSHD that's just not up to date anymore. So we're working on raising awareness. We have a social media campaign going on right now called Cure FSHD. So if you are on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, if you search on hashtag Cure FSHD, you will find hundreds of images that have been posted from our campaign. Each image is of a person with FSHD coupled with a fact about FSHD. So we want to spread awareness and spread education about what FSHD is. And it's important now, not only because, you know, you will really change someone's life. They suddenly know that there's a name to what's been bothering, you know, their disease. So that's an immediate effect of sharing these images. But it's really important because we are starting to have clinical trials. There was one launched last year in Europe. So these are for new experimental drugs that are aimed at FSHD. And, there's a new biotech that just started a drug program that was announced yesterday. And there are others on the way. And some of the major pharmas and biotechs are beginning, they have programs for FSHD treatment. And so in the next few years, there will be clinical trials where we will need patients. And we can't wait for patients to just suddenly come out of the woods when we have a clinical trial because we need patients to volunteer for studies now so that we understand enough about how FSHD progresses. It's very different from person to person. That makes it very challenging to design a drug study where you can look at a group of patients and say this drug is having an effect. know, because one person is in a wheelchair, another person is walking but has a limp, another person just has facial symptoms. So how do you develop a way to measure the progress of that disease where in this group of patients you can say, yes, this drug is working? It's very challenging, and to tackle that challenge, we need patients to volunteer today for studies that are going on, studies that the FSH Society and others are funding to develop the appropriate, measuring sticks.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Workers Action Center is a community organization of workers, students, and activists committed to improving the lives and working conditions of people in low-wage and unstable employment. Our goal is to ensure that all workers have a voice and are treated with dignity and fairness. The Workers Action Center provides a new way for people to join together to fight for fair employment. If you would like more information, please contact us at 519-252-1212 or info@wwac.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from June Kinoshita. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Melanie Moore from the Center for Independent Living. So tell me a little bit about recent happenings with expanding the circle.
I would say that one of the biggest things is our Facebook page, and I'll have to forward that to you because I don't know it off the top of my head, but I would say that that's where we're getting a lot more publicity, which is fantastic, because the outreach piece in terms of calling organizations has been extremely slow, and so the Facebook page has helped us in our outreach piece. So we're still doing interviews. There's been also training done since we've last spoken up in Treaty 3 in the Kenora area, and that was a fantastic experience, and I'm happy to put you in touch with someone up there. And then there's also interviews that are being done in the Saugé Métis area, which is Southampton area. So that's kind of where we are. It's a very, very slow process. And I think one of the things I really, really want to bring home is that whether someone is First Nations from Six Nations, Inuit, Mohawk, it doesn't matter what tribe people are from. It's more about being Aboriginal or Native and having a disability and sharing your story. So the story can be a human rights experience. The story can be an experience where you've felt discriminated against. The story can be unfair treatment. And it can be the treatment can be from, say, maybe knowledge keepers or elders, could be from social workers, hospital staff, anybody. It doesn't matter who it's from. And I think that sometimes people aren't sure of if they have a legitimate story.
So for those who might have missed our prior interview, what's the overall purpose of gathering the stories?
The overall purpose of gathering the stories is to actually have the stories and recognize that people that are Aboriginal and have disabilities have stories where they've experienced discrimination. And I think the other overall piece is that although this project is funded from Disability Rights Promotion International, the RPI, it isn't just Toronto area. It has international implications as well as being in Ontario. So it's beginning, it's at a beginning stage where people's voices that are First Nations and have disabilities are actually heard and recorded. And that way there can be recommendations moving forward to change things. So for example, I'm blind or visually impaired. I'm First Nations, actually from Six Nations Reserve. My father's from First Nations. And sometimes knowledge keepers aren't familiar with what people that are blind can and can't do, so they don't know how to show me how to be in a ceremony, for example. So it's getting that education piece out to everybody so that we don't feel discriminated against within our own community. Or it could be someone that's going to the hospital that actually may look Native and doesn't get treated discriminatively in the hospital setting because they're Native. So it's getting those stories out there and then making recommendations moving forward to what needs to be done and how people need to be treated fairly would be the overall piece.
So if you could send any one message about the need for this work, what would it be?
Here's the time for your voice to be heard and changes to be made. So it's about taking the initiative and making it happen. And being proud of who you are and what you stand for. Because everybody has a right to be treated equally, fairly, and respectfully.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Expanding the circle. To me, the name kind of says it all. Because, in terms of embracing individuals with disabilities into the community, recognizing their equality, their strength, is expanding one's own circle. Circle of friends, but also circle of perception. Once a person realizes the strength, the capability of a person with a disability, that's not a door that gets shut again. Once a person has their awakening, if you will, to the understanding a person with a disability is just that, a person first and foremost, that their disability is simply one aspect of who and what they are. The wisdom gained from that expands one's horizons so much more than if they hadn't had contact with someone with a disability. But I maintain disability life has affected every family everywhere. Simply a question of recognition. Simply a question of the awareness. Did I know this person in my own family's history story? That's the wonderful thing about a project like Expanding the Circle. It's creating a record for all time of these things that we as a society can work on making better. Disability life is about growth, change, development. And if we find the stories of those who've experienced, unfortunately, the short end of the stick, we can go from there and build something better for them. But it begins with that recognition, with that understanding. It begins by asking the question, are we doing all that we can? And if we're not, what can we do to make things better? I think it's a brilliant approach asking First Nations and Native individuals. They no doubt can offer some very unique, very enriching stories. The perspective on disability life is different depending upon the individual. Now, I've had the privilege of speaking to disability representatives from literally across the globe. Fact is, they each have a perspective all their own. However, one thing they all do share no matter where they're from, what their experiences might have been. The recognition for the right to equality, the right to be recognized as strong, intelligent people. This is something that has touched on every corner of this world. The ability to have someone saying, we can do this better. That's why groups like Disability Rights Promotion International do such amazing work. They don't just say, yeah, we've done this in our own backyard and that's good enough, because it isn't. What's the purpose of making things better for an individual with a disability just so they themselves can enjoy it? What about other parts of the world? What about the less fortunate or the oppressed? Or those who historically haven't had all the advantages? Don't we as a society owe them our very best effort? If we found a policy system, a model, that actually works, why in the world wouldn't we want to share this with others? Ultimately, it is their decision whether they want to embrace that or not. That's true. But fact is, once you show them it's possible to create that infrastructure, once you show them it's possible to do better by these individuals, I don't think any group in their right mind would say, we have the means to make things better for our own people, but we're not going to do it. Because there's no valid reason. If you have the resources, you have the people, make the effort. Because the truth is, we are building a generation of leaders day by day. And how we establish these policies here and now will shape for the future. If these young leaders grow up seeing a system of respect, tolerance, and yes, even guidance for these people, they're going to say, this is something that really matters. This is something we should really continue on. And we're going to keep building the technological, medical advancements, but also we're going to see if we can do even better than the generation that came before. Policies, practices. It's building for the future, really is. We can't allow the policies and the stories of these individuals, policies there to protect them, stories they would bring to light. We can't allow them simply to fall by the wayside. We can't say, yes, in principle, we're supposed to help you. We're supposed to give you this medical access or this level of respect or equality. We're not going to do it. Equality is never to be an afterthought, folks. It is never to be something that we do simply because we're obligated to do it. Fact is, the more time you spend with a person with a disability, the more you get to know them, and the less pronounced any given condition would seem to be. Because you get to know them as a person, and that, I believe, is what anyone would want, whether they have a disability or not. We're all looking for the same thing, regardless of our background. We're all looking for that acceptance, that wisdom in people. It says, get to know me, not what a stereotype or a baseline would tell you I am. Get to know me as a person. Because I might even surprise you a little bit. My capabilities, strengths, even insights. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.